hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fog that I keep. If we don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fog that I keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when we're running down, you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side. I mean, that's the name of this program here on AlbrightTV.com or WhatResistanceRadio.com. You can reach us through either of those venue approaches. Well, the wrecking crew of out-of-control people in the United States and to a much lesser extent Canada is on the move. Toppling statues of Christopher Columbus. There's an example of that happening in Virginia. The statue of Christopher Columbus was torn down, burned, and thrown into a lake. And Eva Schmetzer comments, and she's one of the people following me on Facebook, says, "It's like in China during the Cultural Revolution." And it is. In the time of the Red Guards, as I was explaining today to people on the way to our protest in Toronto, I'll get to that in a minute, but there was a madness that ranged the country. And reason did not in any way play a part of it. When Mao unleashed his out-of-control young followers to try to have another revolution within the party, his view was that many of the old comrades who fought with him in the revolution that imposed communism on China and that came to power in 1949, many of these people have become fat and complacent and corrupt and lazy. And probably many of them had. But so his idea was to have another revolution, but not to overthrow them exactly, but to terrorize them. And out of this chaos, I guess he thought, something. I don't know, it's almost like the joy of destruction and anarchy. Well, the young people were set loose. For years, there was no teaching going on in the schools. The entire society was in turmoil. The economy was in turmoil. Eventually, as Mao got older, this had to end, and eventually Mao died and was replaced by Deng Xiaoping, who took a more practical view about the economy. Now, not that I'm defending him or anything, but anyway, during the Cultural Revolution, young Red Guards would storm around and just willy-nilly denounce anybody as a counter-revolutionary or as a running dog of U.S. imperialism, which means, I guess, he supported the U.S., or a splitist. Another title that meant, followed a slightly different line from the current line of the Communist Party, which wasn't the same line as yesterday. It was a time of great insecurity and madness. Students would burst into a classroom and denounce a professor as a capitalist rodent. He might be put on, he might have to stand at what's called a struggle session, and a placard would be hung around his neck with a list of his crimes. Or he might be sat on a stool in the same way, and a dunce cap put on his head. And various people would come up and denounce him and slap him. In many cases, people were beaten to death. Or older men or fragile scholars would simply die of a heart attack or die of the abuse. Now, none of this had anything to do with any reality. Anybody could be accused. It wouldn't matter that the person had been a long-time communist, a loyal member of the party going back to the 20s, or any. Reality meant nothing. Everything was in the moment, and everything was chaos. There is something similar going on in America and to a slightly lesser extent in Canada today. The destruction in various U.S. cities of statues of Christopher Columbus, the beheading, for heaven's sakes, of the statue of Christopher Columbus in Boston. These are the white haters, the madmen, the cultural Marxists, the psychopaths, who so hate us and our history, they want to destroy all signs of it, and make no mistake about it, and eventually destroy us. It's not just the symbols. It's not just the symbols. What's the big beef against Christopher Columbus? Okay. In the first meetings of the Europeans with the very, very primitive Native Indians on the Caribbean islands, yes, there was some abuse. The conquistadors didn't even quite know what to make of these people. Should they try to save them for God or try to convert them to Christianity? Should they use them as slaves? As horrific as this idea might be, there's nothing new about this in human history, that a conquered people are often exterminated or enslaved. And there was an uneasy relationship. Okay. So should the statue of Christopher Columbus come down? Of course not. His contribution, his discovery, and one might argue about that, certainly North America, was visited by our people over 10,000 years ago. But okay, the rediscovery, let's say, in more modern historical times of North America was a huge achievement, and led to the colonization and the development of the Caribbean and Latin America. Christopher Columbus played a key role in that. Was he a saint? Well, that's not the point. He's not being elevated to sainthood. Should his statues come down? Of course not. And across America, of course, even more in the target of the hate white haters are the signs of the any signs of the Confederacy. Statues of people like General Beauregard or Camp Beauregard is named after a very widely Confederate general. And President Trump, to his great credit, has refused to change the name of the camp. Why should the brave man of yesteryear be shoved down the memory hole of history? Well, they shouldn't. Does that mean they were saints? No, it does not mean they were saints. They're not elevated to sainthood. They're elevated because they made an important contribution to the history of the United States, or in some cases of Canada. That's why they're remembered. Now, the present wrecking crew in Canada has perhaps more modest goals. In Toronto, they want to get rid of the name of a street called Dundas. Well, Dundas not only is the name of a major street in Toronto, it's the name in many parts of Ontario, of a highway that stretches from Toronto right to Windsor. It's the name of a suburb of Hamilton, Dundas. It's named after an 18th century Englishman who made considerable contributions. The argument is, well, he supported slavery and delayed a bill that would abolish slavery for about 15 years through the British Parliament. But that's not the only thing he did. So the argument is some people would be traumatized to live on the same street, or even to have to cross the street named after a man who's opposed the abolition of slavery. Really? Until this issue was raised a few days ago in Toronto, I would say not one person in 10,000 knew who Dundas was. So no, nobody was traumatized. This week, the utterly, pathetically, cowardly is perhaps being nice about it. I call this leadership race traitors, who run the NASCAR outfit in the United States. After the complaint of one black NASCAR driver that he was just too traumatized. And I'm not too traumatized to drive, apparently, but he didn't want the Confederate flag being waved either by any of the people racing for NASCAR to be allowed to appear at any NASCAR track. So telling Americans what they can bring to by way of a flag. Could they bring, let's say, the flag of piracy on the Jolly Roger, the skull and crossbones? Sure, no problem. Could somebody wear a Che Guevara t-shirt? Sure, no problem. Could somebody wear a Black Lives Matter t-shirt? I'm sure that would be no problem with that either. I mean, some people might not like it, but would they be banned from the track? Well, of course not. So who would be banned? Well, you would not be allowed to bring a Confederate flag. Well, that's kind of attacks freedom of expression. It also attacks identity. Many Americans and some Canadians see the rebel flag as an assertion of our identity. Oh, it's about slavery. No, it's not about slavery. I don't know anybody who wants to go back to the era of slavery, who yearns for the for slavery. Slavery was a passing institution in the United States. It was probably always a bad institution. Bad in the sense that if they had not brought the Negroes to North America, this endless racial problem might not have existed. And, you know, there's a bumper sticker that's been around for ages. Roughly, I think, from memory, it says something like, if I'd known all the trouble it would have caused, I'd have picked the damn cotton myself. Yeah, I mean, the Negro presence in North America has been a major and remains a major ongoing problem. Okay, the Confederate flag represents different things to different people. For many white Southerners, it represents an assertion of their identity. Oh, they're not allowed to have an identity, right? Blacks are, Jews are, LGBTQ are allowed to have identity. Well, transgendered have many identities. But white Southerners cannot assert their identity. Now, since when did "I'm offended by your identity" trump the question? In Canada, we're forced to accept Sikhs wearing turbans, which offend me. I mean, what are you playing dress up for? You're my country. You know, like, dress that way in India if you want. In fact, the thing is, in India, many people don't, and many Sikhs don't dress in that costume. It's like they become more Sikh and more traditionalist when they come to Canada. Anyway, well, we have to tolerate all this stuff. NASCAR, of course, knuckled under. The spine of much of the American and Canadian business establishment is so weak, it would make the average strand of well-cooked spaghetti look strong by comparison. And I call these people out. They're race traitors. They betray their people. What? Why? Well, what? For peace, maybe. Well, you know, the blacks won't complain, so maybe they'll leave us alone. Doesn't matter what we do to our own people. Doesn't matter how we abuse our own people. We'll be left alone, or so they fancy. Well, there are some people pushing that. And I strongly urge you to boycott and let them know. It's not just enough to boycott. Let them know that you are fed up. Not just with NASCAR. Here's a message from Bob Jones. Let's hope NASCAR goes out of business. Also, the largely black-dominated sports of basketball, football, should go out of business. And he points out that many of the teams are owned by Jews, even though they're not players, and many of the players are blacks. And not because they're necessarily better players, but to promote race mixing. And that's a lot of what it was all about. This fellow Bob Jones notes, baseball used to be correct when they had white teams and Negro leagues. There was a Negro league. Well, anyway, whether you want to go back to that or not, what is happening here, of course, is the attack on and destruction of one of our institutions. NASCAR series driver to quit over the Confederate flag ban, and we must really rally around people with principle. A NASCAR truck series driver is quitting the sport
at the end of the year over the organization's ban on Confederate memorabilia. Ray Ciccarelli wrote on Facebook on Wednesday that it's been a fun ride and a dream come true, but if this is the direction NASCAR is headed, we'll not participate after the 2020 season is over. NASCAR on Wednesday suddenly and unexpectedly banned Confederate memorabilia, which many see as a symbol of slavery and racism in the name of providing a welcoming and inclusive environment for all fans. NASCAR has already banned its cars from displaying the Confederate flag, once a common theme in the heavily Southern circuits, from its own cars and merchandise, but fans were still allowed to display the banner. They will no longer be allowed, and Mr. Ciccarelli accused the organization of taking sides politically against its own fans, and that's the tragic truth of it. I don't believe in kneeling during the anthem, nor taking away people's right to fly whatever flag they love. I could care less about the Confederate flag, but there are people that do, and it doesn't make them a racist. Makes them a racist. All you are doing is catering to one group. And he wrote that he won't be spending money to participate in any political BS. So everything is for sale. He says. And you know, sadly, what he says is absolutely true. That the management of NASCAR are catering to one group, ironically not their base. NASCAR races do not attract hordes of Negro fans. It's just not their thing. So in order to create an inclusive environment for people who are probably not going to attend anyway, the base, the majority, the supporters, are tossed under the bus. Their rights. And I think, you know, if you are a person who attends these races, not only should you complain, but you should militantly demand that there be no signs or T-shirts allowed that would be offensive to you or might not make you feel included. For instance, like Black Lives Matter. You know, we, unfortunately, the strategy we're going to have to adopt in the face of our own white race traitors, and that's, you know, let's not mince words or give them a name they don't deserve. These are not just bad decisions. These are anti-white decisions. And let's call it that. And blacks always make things personal. It's not a principle, it's personal. And we have to start doing the same thing. Cross us, and let's call it what it is. You hate us as white people, or we're expendable. We're fine as long as we contribute money to your business cause. But our issues and our interests are expendable. And we have to stress that. There's repeated reports that viewership of NFL football is way down among whites. A lot of white males, for whom this was almost a weekly ritual to watch the game of the week, are so disgusted by the antics of some of the Negro players and taking a knee and all that type of stuff, the disrespect for American traditions, we don't have to watch it. And, of course, that's really where the money is. The money in professional sports is not primarily the money that is spent for admission to the games, although that's important. A lot of that of it is in the TV rights, and the TV rights are almost entirely governed, or I mean the cost of the TV rights is almost entirely governed by the viewership. You know, the more the viewership, the more advertisers have to pay for advertising. I mean, and that's what it's all about. It's all about advertising. Well, the Wrecking Crew is the cowards are out in Atlanta. The Negroes were demonstrating last night, doing a little bit of burning, blocking I-75. Why? Well, because another Negro got shot by the police. That policeman, in typical Maoist fashion, is already gone. He fired. He's fired. No hearing. No due process. Whatever happened to English common law? To our basic rights? He's fired. Fired on the spot. Well, not quite on the spot. Fired within 24 hours. Well, what was the problem? Well, it's a typical problem with some blacks. The policeman, incidentally, didn't just go. He wasn't cruising Atlanta to find some poor black he could shoot. What happened? It's a rather interesting little story. And I'm going to give it to you and discuss it. Atlanta cop fired after shooting sparks. New wave of protests. They're always protesting. One of the problems, unfortunately, is that along with the racial agitators, we've got this perfect storm of a lot of people having time on their hands because of, that's right, the Wuhan flu brought to us by Red China. And they have time on their hands because in wild overreaction to a severe flu, granted, it's a severe flu that can kill you, yeah, it can. Especially if you're compromised, you're old and have a lot of illnesses, or you're not so old, but you have you're obese, hypertension, and so on. Well, in the overreaction, all sorts of businesses were forced to shut down. Lots of people are unemployed, and lots of blacks have time on their hands to go out and demonstrate and or riot. Okay, here's what happened in Atlanta. An Atlanta police officer was fired following the fatal shooting of a black man, and another officer was placed on administrative duty, the police department announced early Sunday. The move follows the Saturday resignation of Atlanta Police Chief Erica Shields, who stepped down after the Friday killing of Bayshard Brooks, 27. After it sparked a new wave of protests in Atlanta after turbulent demonstrations following the death of George Floyd. The terminated officer was identified as Garrett Rolfe, who was hired in October 2013, and the officer placed on administrative duty is Devin Brosnan, who was hired 2 years ago. The police department also released body camera and dash camera footage from both officers. More than 40 minutes elapsed between the time Brosnan first knocked on Brooks' car door, while he was in the Wendy's drive-thru, and when gunshots ring out. So it's a long incident. Rolfe arrives on the scene about 16 minutes in. The shooting is audible in footage from Rolfe's dash camera and both officers' bodies camera, but it wasn't captured on any of the four recordings provided by the police. Apparently, this Negro, what strange name does he have? Rayshard Brooks was apparently sleeping in his car at a drive-through. I guess the drive-thru was closed. So it was Wendy's drive-thru. The police investigate, or trying to find out what the problem is. They administer apparently a sobriety test, and he fails it. He's drunk. Well, inebriated. They try to get him out of the car, and some of the footage from the body cams, you can see a struggle. He's struggling on the ground. The police try to taser him. He grabs the taser and runs away, or lurches away, several times turning back. And I don't know if he was firing the taser at the police or pointing it at them. And at some point, he got shot. Now, Rolf tried to handcuff Rayshard Brooks after speaking to him for about 20 minutes.
Now, so what is the problem?
Well, the problem is bad behavior. Why would this Rayshard Brooks not simply give up, allow himself to be arrested, because apparently that's what they were going to do, go to the police station, go through the procedure, and let his lawyer, or let the court system handle things. Struggling with two armed police officers isn't a bright idea. And he was struggling. Then he got away, grabbed their taser, turned and apparently pointed it at them. And one of the officers shot and killed him. It's sad that what might be an exceedingly minor offense escalates into the man's death. But there's a problem there. It's bad black behavior. I mean, wrestling with the cop, trying to escape, pointing a taser back at him. This isn't very smart behavior. What's the reaction of the higher ups? Throw the officer under the bus. No due process, no proper hearing. You're gone. You're expendable. And I think this is a lesson that's beginning to sink through to a lot of whites. We have a rascally establishment, business establishment, political establishment, people by cowards, and people who hate us. Or, if not, they don't actively hate us, they have no loyalty to us. You are expendable. And I think this is a lesson not only that each of us has to learn, and I'm sure that I have learned it when I was a teacher, but we have to instill in teaching race realism to our own children and grandchildren. It's a hard lesson. You'd like to think that you'd be treated fairly, but very often you will not be treated fairly. And this, we should never for one second show those people who are in charge anything but withering contempt for the way they've treated us, the way they've treated this officer. And race realism says part of this incident would not have occurred had the Negro obeyed the law. There was some sort of discussion. They decided to put him under, the police decided to put him under arrest. He should have gone quietly. He'd still be alive. The case would be before a court, or might not even get that far, might simply be dismissed. We're not exactly clear what he was charged with. But it obviously was something relatively minor. It's just bad behavior. No, of course, it's far easier to talk about racist cops. Well, now, in today's National Post, Father
Raymond D'Souza has a very interesting column that says, "Stop pretending politicians follow the science." See, that's what all the politicians in Canada and the United States have said by way of covering their ample butts as they've imposed the most ridiculous restrictions on us in this lockdown that is in many parts of North America, shut down most businesses, restaurants, clothing stores, personal services, and so on. It's been devastating to the economy, and all along the way we will be told, oh, the science is clear. We're only following the science. Well, Father D'Souza makes some very good points. So when the Prime Minister took a knee in a jam-packed demonstration on Parliament Hill, he was not following the science. After all, the science of public health told us that it was so dangerous for a person to take two knees, the science of public health told us that it was so dangerous for a person to take two knees to an empty in an empty cathedral that all the churches were closed. We can't join together in a large group in church, so the churches are essentially closed. So taking two knees, or you know, kneeling down and praying to God, that's really dangerous. However, the Prime Minister taking a knee, getting down on one knee, to curry the favor of the white haters in a big protest on Parliament Hill a week ago Friday, that's okay. No, the science suggested that large gatherings could be risky, and of course it's that even that's debatable. Being outdoors is less risky than being indoors. But Father D'Souza's point is, science can only give you facts. What you do with that is a political judgment. So the politicians follow the science when it suits their purposes. And he goes on to say, that's the point. We don't follow the science. We take note of scientific results and then make policy decisions. The Prime Minister thinks that the low risk of spreading the coronavirus is worth going to a political protest that he supports. He doesn't think that the infinitesimally small risk of praying privately in a church is worth it. Fine. We disagree with that, and I can find hypocrisy and double standards in his position, and that is the point. The politicians like to pretend that there's something sacred about their position because we're following the science. No, they are taking what science says and making a judgment. The judgment in this profoundly Christian-hating Prime Minister is that it's risky for people to attend church. So, close the churches. on the other hand, if it's risky, it's still acceptable risk to go to a big mass gathering, to take a knee, and to show that he is fighting systemic racism. He's protesting systemic racism. Of course, the ludicrous. This is ludicrous because he is the power. It's like protesting against yourself. We are truly in a nutty season. The season of the Red Guards. Well, this is Paul Fromm. I'm going to take my musical break right now and going to play a great balladeer. I mean, with a strong Christian sense, and this is Randy Travis. I'm going to start off with a
a song that always gives me chills. I think it's just a fantastic, moving story. And this is Three Wooden Crosses.
A farmer and a teacher, a hooker and a preacher, riding on a midnight bus bound for Mexico. One was headed for vacation, one for higher education, and two of them were searching for lost souls. That driver never ever saw the stop sign. And 18-wheelers can't stop on a dime. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, heaven only knows. I guess it's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. That farmer left to harvest a home and 80 acres. The faith and love for growing things in his young son's heart. And that teacher left her wisdom in the minds of lots of children and did her best to give them all a better start. And that preacher whispered, can't you see the promised land? As he lay his blood-stained Bible in that hooker's hand. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, heaven only knows. I guess it's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. That's the story that our preacher told last Sunday, as he held that blood-stained Bible up for all of us to see. He said, bless the farmer and the teacher and the preacher. He gave this Bible to my mama, who read it to me. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, now I guess we know. It's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. This song doesn't rhyme, neither do me and you. We're doing just fine, no matter what we try. We go round and round, getting no place. It's bringing me pain, but this song doesn't rhyme. This song doesn't rhyme, or I wish it could. I'm losing my faith, and you know that ain't right. Had our chance to make love work out. This is the last waltz. This song doesn't. wasn't mine. Neither do me and you. We're doing just fair. No matter what we try, we go round and round, getting no thanks. And it's bringing me this song doesn't rhyme.
Realize you're all I ever wanted, and it
it's killing me to be so far away. Would you tell me that you love me too? And would we cry together? Or would you simply laugh at me and say, I told you so. Thank you. comes a way and by his blood I'm free. I'm free from all of guilt and shame. I sin no longer now. And when death comes, I'll have no fear. The grave can't hold me down. This world around here, no more my home. All heaven waits for me. Says Jesus, wash my sins away, and by his blood I'm free.
Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side. Me back with you again tomorrow, and going to sign off tonight as I always do with the anthem of the real Canada, our Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on AltRightTV.com or WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose entwine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka's Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever.